Well, welcome, and we are now on the fourth lesson of this workbook we're going through, and with today's lesson, I apologize that we don't have workbooks for everybody on this, because I'm having to cherry-pick little spots and pieces through this, because if we just read all the passages that are given, we'd probably be here for about 4 hours. So, but with this lesson, we're going to start going through what the Bible, the wisdom literature in the Bible, talks about money. And one other thing is, I don't like the way it pulls up individually, but I couldn't figure out how to undo that. Normally it's easy, but they have something weird. So I'm going to try to click all of them through, and then we can talk about things. And I start rambling, so please throw something, raise your hand, jump up, something if you need to say something. But in preparing for this, looking at Proverbs, there's a lot that deals with money. When I was in elementary school, I remember having to take the book of Proverbs and divide the book of Proverbs up into the different themes and categories. And so if you just deal with money, there are pages and pages and pages in the book of Proverbs. And so money, wealth, industriousness, there's a lot there. And so the book of Proverbs, as we know, is really general truths. Just because Proverbs says it doesn't mean it's always going to be that way. And we can look at Job a little bit later and see kind of one of the major exceptions to the rule for what we're going to be talking about. But Proverbs is not promises. It's just a very wise man who noticed correlations, and he taught us about them. And so there are pages of these topics that we're going to be looking at where Proverbs deals with money. And so probably the first and most important thing for us to realize is in Proverbs 10:22. And it says, "The blessings of the Lord make one rich, and he adds no sorrow with it." And so here, some of these passages, I think there's a little bit of a poetic license where the author of this this workbook has a view or a slant on things. But with here, in 22, "The blessings of the Lord make one rich." So, two ways of looking at this. You don't have to be rich monetarily. You are blessed by the Lord. You truly are wealthy. But here, he's seeming to take this a literal, "The blessings of the Lord make one rich." And as we go through the book of Proverbs and look at these passages, in some ways, yes, if you follow these and things fall out the way they typically would, you should end up with more wealth than if you didn't follow these. And so there are two ways of looking at that. If we could flip over to Proverbs 24. If I could have somebody read verses 3 and 4 for me. Proverbs 24, 3 and 4.
"Through wisdom a house is built, and by understanding it is established. By knowledge the rooms are filled with precious and pleasant riches."
So Ed, what is this saying here? Yeah, and it starts, though, with "by wisdom a house is built." So you have to have a good foundation. You have to have a good structure for the rest to follow. And at the end of these two verses, "by knowledge the rooms are filled with all precious and pleasant things." And so, once again, two ways of looking at most of these. But yes, definitely if you get wisdom and understanding, you're going to do well. And that could correlate to actually material blessings. I don't want to go in and read it, but we all know wisdom throughout the scriptures is described as it's better to be wise than to be rich. But in 23, so real close here, 23 and verse 4 and 5, if I could have somebody read that for me.
"Do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. For
This was quoted to me a different way growing up. My father would say, money talks. It says goodbye. And then you read this, and sure enough, that's exactly what this is saying. And does the Bible tell us we need to work? Yes. I mean, even in Genesis, in paradise, Adam and Eve worked. I mean, that was their job, was to work and take care of the garden. So work is not a bad thing. And working and getting paid, earning money, that's not a bad thing either. But this very first part of four, is that written to Americans? It seems we have a problem with this. Do not overwork to be rich. You turn on the television, you listen, you know, Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous. That was on when I was growing up. It's probably back on or reruns. But you looked at what all these people had, just the super ultra, you know, 0.1% of the world, how they live, and we think we need that. So I'm going to work my tail off. I'm going to work and work and work to get it. But verse 5, for riches make themselves wings, they fly away like an eagle toward heaven. And so working is good, but if your focus is in the wrong place with your working, you're going to be really, really disappointed, especially come April 15th. And then we won't read the passage, but riches often tempt us to deny God. And this is where we read, I think, last week, and it'll be again later. I have it highlighted for another point. All of these, there's multiple points that he can pull out of one passage. But, you know, the prayer was, don't make me too rich and don't make me too poor. Just give me what I need that I'm not going to steal and I'm not going to rely on myself. And so, okay, and feel free, jump in here as we are talking. So, if somebody could read Proverbs 6, 10, and 11 for me. It's amazing how many Proverbs, when you read through it, you realize your parents were quoting to you growing up. This was another one. And it still has application, no matter what you do, wealth or any job that you have to do. When you have a task for school or a paper that's due, well, I'll do it tomorrow. We're playing basketball tonight. Well, I'll do it tomorrow. I'm really tired. And eventually you hit that deadline and something's not done. Same thing with taking care of this. Now, most of Proverbs, you got to remember, are written to an industrial society. What kind of society was this written to? An agrarian. And so most of the people here farmed, whether it was raising crops, raising livestock, or both. You have to be diligent. You have to plan. Because if you don't plan in the spring and start tilling and breaking up the ground, you're not going to plan in time. If you don't plan in time, you're not going to have a harvest. That's potentially, 6 months there. And then off season, you're preparing your land and getting things ready for the future. And so you can't take time off. And so here, being industrious is definitely going to help, maybe not with prosperity, but just help you live. But definitely it's rare that a lazy person is prosperous.
Especially when you have a winter crop also.
That's true. Or things you need to build in order for the summer. So, how about chapter 12, verse 11? In your line of work, Joel, do you meet a lot of people who had been very dedicated and disciplined, or do you meet a lot of people who playing games seem to be priority at first?
That they will work far harder to avoid work than the actual work, because they would just be honest and get it.
and that's not just your line of work. Before I moved here, I was an interim division director. And I would come home and complain to Paula. I'm like, if they would have just done what they needed to do, it would have taken 5 minutes. They were in my office a total of 2 hours today complaining about the 5 minutes worth of work that they didn't want to do. It's true at every line. If we don't want to do something, we will do whatever we can to avoid doing it, sometimes requiring much more work. And so, but work is what God told us. That's how you generate a living. We told in the New Testament, if a man won't work, he shouldn't eat. And so, very few of us are born with an inheritance. If we do, it's just enough to do a little bit here and a little bit there. But most of us, we need to work for a living. And that's a principle that has been down through the ages. Something else we read of in Proverbs is just about righteousness and evil. You tend to reap what you sow. That righteousness is better than wealth. But let's look at two passages. One in 16:8, if somebody could read that. And then we'll also do 28:6. Okay, and then 28:6, if somebody could read that. I always find these contrasts as interesting when Solomon is the one speaking them. Wealthiest man that has ever lived, saying it is better to have a little with righteousness than vast revenues without justice. Better is the poor who walks his integrity than a perverse one, though he be rich. He also had the most wives, and he's the one who mentions about better to live in a corner than with a contentious wife. So he had seen both good and bad and had a lot of thoughts on things. But how many of us know people that are exquisitely happy and they invite you over and you realize they have basically a one-room house and they probably can't afford to have you over for dinner, but they're having you over for dinner. And you sit there and think, wow, how are they doing this? I'm sure you all have met people like that. I've known some people that every visiting preacher got invited over to this one lady's house, and it was pretty much the same meal all the time because that's what she could afford. And those were the best dinners anybody ever had because of the conversation and the company that was there. And that's something that, once again, we as Americans were so blessed. I think we lose sight of that. We need to have more. We have to do this. We have to have that. And that doesn't matter in the scheme of things. And Solomon here very eloquently tells us, better to have a little and be happy with it. Better to have a little and to be righteous, to have justice. Thoughts or questions? I'm still rambling on, so jump in here.
Reminds us of what Paul said about godliness with contentment.
It's great gain. And that will be mentioned a little bit later, but that's absolutely, Paul was content. Shipwrecked, beaten, put in prison. Most of his own countrymen were angry at him. He didn't have reason to be content if we look at it from just a worldly point of view. But he had gained it all, and he was content. We won't read this, but 2021, about inherited money is often quickly lost. Think about gifts that your children have. Which do they take care of more? The Christmas gift, the birthday gift they didn't work for, or something that they worked really hard for and earned and then went and bought themselves? My dad tells me a story that he used to peel out and burn rubber and all that. And then my grandfather pulled him aside one day and said, you know, that first set of tires and brakes was on me. you know you're paying for the next one. He said those lasted about twice the expected life mileage-wise. So, yeah, when you're paying for it, you tend to take better care of things. But if somebody could read chapter 3, verses 27 and 28. And then chapter 11, somebody could read chapter 11, 24 and 25. And then 19 and 17, if somebody could read 19, verse 17. This is a very common theme as well. The Israelites in the law of Moses were to take care of those who needed help. Here Solomon is once again saying, really the whole point of us having money, what is the point of us having wealth? We're to be doing good with it. It's no point in having something you can't take with you. Solomon in Ecclesiastes even talks about, you don't even know if you're going to leave your inheritance. Is your son going to be a smart person or is he going to be a fool? You know, is he going to do well with this? But we're to take care of others. And you are basically, when you take care of others who can't help you back, you're giving to God is what you're doing. And God will repay. And I will tell you a personal story. Growing up, anybody who visited the congregation, I mean, as a little kid, you can pick out people who are scamming. And people would come in, I need money. And my parents would always help them out. And I'd look, I mean, my sister and I would be like, Mom, Dad, they're just taking you. They don't need that. We don't know that. God knows, and he'll take care of it. And that's just how they were. Well, when I was a junior in high school, my dad lost his job with Eastern Airlines. So for a year, he was out of a job. And he would he was driving a truck, but we never had enough to cover what we needed. And my mom would call and put bills off. And finally, you know, you get the letter, they're going to turn off the power or else we need some money. And she would write the check for whatever was needed and put it in the mail. We didn't have any money in the bank account. And she would say, God will provide. And generally that same day, the postman picked up the letter, there would be a letter for us in the mailbox or the next day with a check to cover the bounced check. And it would be a letter from somebody saying, I borrowed this money from you 20 years ago and I forgot that I owed you it until just now. And for me growing up, that was a great lesson, one on just depending on God. Now, I have to make my faith my own, but it helps when you can see your parents depending on God. But it was this in action. They were giving money to God. And God was taking care of them when they needed it. He returned it to them. And so we see that all throughout the Proverbs, and that, I think, is the big thing that we need to think about. Our whole goal in making money is not to be the wealthiest person in the block, to keep up with the Joneses, to get a boat because the LaQuires right down the street from me have a boat. You know, I'm glad she has it. She can't take us all out on it, though. They said there's not enough seats. So do I get a bigger boat so we all can go? No. You know, she enjoys what she has. I have something else that I enjoy that they don't have. But the point of using our blessings that God has given us is to bless others. And that's the theme we see through Proverbs. And in 17:1, we see what one of the better thing is, You know, he mentions in 17:1, better is a dry morsel with quietness than a house full of feasting with strife. And so it's better to have peace, but the house of feasting tends to bring along strife. It tends to be the more you have, the more worries crop up, the more that you have to take care of, the more obligations, and you can lose sight of what is going on. And 38 through 9 is what we had just mentioned a little bit ago about don't overwork, don't be greedy. Because Agur mentions here, he prays to God, he says, two things I request of you, beginning of verse 7, deprive me not before I die. Remove falsehood and lies far from me. But then he mentions, give me neither poverty nor riches. Feed me with the food you prescribe for me. Why not riches? Lest I be full and deny you and say, who is the Lord? Or lest I be poor and steal and profane the name of my God. So here he's saying that he doesn't want to be wealthy because he sees what comes from it. And then for the people who actually, the people who are more lucky than getting struck by lightning twice, the people who play the lottery and win, what happens right after they win? They discover all the relatives they have and all the friends they have and the acquaintances they have. And what does Solomon tell us 3,000 years ago in 14 and verse 20? Somebody could read 14 and 20 for me.
The poor man is hated even by his own neighbor, but the rich man has many friends.
Now, they didn't use punctuation in the Hebrew, but I am sure in the Hebrew this had quotation marks around friends. Because that's so true. You don't really know who your friends are till you lose everything. And you have nothing that they can benefit from other than if they truly loved you or not. If you have something that you can take care of, if you can help them out, if you can buy them something, there's a lot more people who are going to be friendly to you. Think about the beggars on the street in a big city. Who are their friends? It's other people just like them, but there's very few who will talk to them, who will treat them like human beings. They don't have any money, they don't have any friends. And the friends they do have, though, are true friends. So what else does Proverbs bring out? If you could go, somebody could turn to 14:31 for me.
He who oppresses the poor reproaches his maker, but he who honors him has mercy on the needy.
And then if somebody else could read 22... verses 22 and 23.
Do not rob the poor because he is poor, nor oppress the afflicted at the gate. For the Lord will plead their cause, plunder the soul of those who plunder them.
So, yeah, do not oppress the poor. And we see this all throughout. Start reading the minor prophets, or actually even the major prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah. Why did the nation of Israel go into captivity? Well, there's lots of reasons. Idolatry was one of them. But what are some of the others that would deal with these passages?
They were heartless.
They were heartless. They were robbing even the widows and the orphans. They were oppressing them. They were not letting the land have their Sabbaths. You start going into all the things they did trying to accumulate wealth. And it's one thing to accumulate wealth in a good way, but when you have to stab somebody else in the back to do it, God frowns on that. And we see that all through, right after Proverbs, just read through to the beginning of the New Testament, and you're going to see how much God hates oppression of the poor. Another one my parents quoted to me. Chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Go to the ant, you sluggard. Consider her ways and be wise, which having no captain, overseer, or ruler, provides her supplies in the summer and gathers her food in the harvest. Have you ever just sat there and watched ants work? It is fascinating. I have, you know, I'd like taking pictures. It's hard to get pictures of a thing that big moving, but I have pictures and video of ants carrying stuff much, much bigger than them. And sometimes it's so big they can't carry it. And here's two or three of them seemingly communicating, working this big item up a brick wall to wherever they needed to go to. They are hardworking. And can you ever get rid of an ant pile in your yard? I mean, you do. It disappears, but then another one pops up right near it. It's almost impossible. They're hard workers.
One thing that you can get out of this also is the need to be a self-starter. There are so many people that will do something, but only if somebody reminds them or tells them to do it. The ants are described as having no captain. It didn't take somebody to tell them every step to take.
And homeschooling, that is something... It's hard to do with some kids. Some kids it's easy, but yeah, you need to be diligent about this is your work. You need to get it done. I'll come back and check on you. Well, why haven't you done it? Well, you didn't tell me to do it again. You know, that's a great trait to have. It's hard to learn sometimes. The people who, yeah, can self-start to focus on a task and remember to do it tend to do better. So... And then some of these other things that we read about, you know, do not trust in riches. Investing shows a wise mean of increasing wealth. But let's go to chapter 11 and verse 1. Now this is almost word for word repeated at least four times in the book of Proverbs. A false balance is an abomination to the Lord, but a just weight is his delight. Now, we all think about it in modern terms. You know, the scale lies in the morning when I step on it. But back then, how did they weigh out money? Well, they didn't have coins a lot of times. They had, whether it was grain or oil... You know, it was a barter system, but there were, as well, silver and gold, but it generally wasn't nice minted coins. That didn't happen generally until the Maccabean period that the Israelites had coins, unless it was a coin of another country. And so you would have a little bit of silver, and then you would also have weights. And you'd put them on a scale, and when they balanced, you would know, oh, I put this much silver, whether it was a shekel or a talent. It was a weight, unit of weight. But what if... you wanted to cheat somebody? Well, you know, if you're paying somebody, I'm giving you this much silver. Well, I might take soap, paint it a rock color and put it on. So just a little bit of silver, all of a sudden, oh, wow, look how much silver you have. You know, if I was trying to cheat somebody and have them pay me, I'd pull out a huge weight and mislabel it. Because, oh, nope, you need to keep giving me some more silver. It's not yet balanced. And so that was common enough that people would do it. So God repeatedly, dishonest gain. In the New Testament, what does he talk about? Those who steal. Steal no more. But then again, why should you steal no more? Why should you work? Remember what the rest of that passage says? Because we want to share with others. That's the whole point of this. The Bible isn't a health and wealth. You know, if you just keep doing what God says, he's going to give you lots of money and you're going to be wealthy. If you are wealthy and blessed, that's great, but you need to use it the way he wants you to. In verse chapter 20 and 21... an inheritance gained hastily at the beginning will not be blessed at the end. Can anybody think of a New Testament passage that deals with an inheritance hastily gained? Prodigal son. That's exactly when I was reading this, I was like, how do you gain an inheritance hastily? You know, well, prodigal son was one. He got his inheritance early. And we see how well that went for him. And so, yeah, when you don't work for it and you haven't planned for it, a lot of times we don't have the mentality of taking care of things. Now, not all poverty comes because it's my fault, that's why I'm poor, but sometimes it is. And so in 24, verse 30 through 34, we see that poverty can be a result of personal foolishness. Somebody can read that for me. So yeah, if you don't do what you're supposed to, you're probably not going to get paid. Now, if you're the one who's paying yourself and you don't do what you're supposed to, you're just going to suffer. And then in 22 and verse 7, we start seeing things about, well, what if I don't have enough? I mean, this, we might as well just label this the credit card passage, because that's what, in modern day, this is exactly where we are. And this is another one my dad would always quote to me. The rich rules over the poor, and the borrower is servant, or some passages say slave, to the lender. So if you borrow money from somebody, there's terms and there's conditions on there. And if you don't fulfill those terms and conditions, a lot of times you're going to be in worse shape, because not only are they going to get back what you borrowed or what you used the money to purchase, so they're going to repossess that. But there's generally a penalty involved as well. You're going to have to repay more. So the borrower is truly slave to the lender. And so for God, think about what he wants us to be doing with our money. Does he want us to be helping others? Well, that's kind of a no-brainer. Are you helping others if you're giving a huge percentage of your money every month to a bank for finance charges or to a credit card company for finance charges? Because not a necessity, but for a want, you went into debt.
So don't loan your money wishing that you'll pay off every month.
Oh, no. I was going to say, now, most of us have debt for school and for a house. Those are the two biggest forms of debt. So my medical school debt, you know, with the interest rate on it, it was pretty low. But still, you don't like having that much debt. So I got a credit card that would pay, instead of cash back, it would just pay directly into that. So every month we'd put anything we could on it and then pay it off at the end of the month. And I always loved at the end of the month reading that little statement. If you pay the minimum payment, it would take me 78 years to pay that off. Really? I mean, and it wasn't exorbitant, but still. The amount that they ask you to pay back is just enough to keep that going.
Very few people look at the cost of a house and add the interest they're paying over 30 years to the house to see what they're actually paying for.
Oh, yeah. If you look at that, it generally 50 to 70% on top of what you paid, if you string it out like you're supposed to, according to the terms of the condition. So you truly are. You know, well, I really can't help you out this month because 60% of my gross pay is going to my house, you know, or whatever it is. That's a lot of money for most people, is the house. Now, is that wrong? I'm not saying it's wrong, but you need to be looking at what is important in the scheme of things and prioritizing. Now, is it bad to own a house? No. Is it bad to go into debt to purchase a house? No, but it might not be the wisest thing for everybody. And so, you know, these are concepts that you need to apply, but still, anytime you go into debt, you're no longer your own boss with where your money goes and what you do. So, and then along with debt, 17:18. Somebody could read 17:18 and then somebody else could turn to 22, 26, and 27. But 17:18. Okay, and then 22, 26, and 27.
Not be one of those who shakes hands in a pledge. One of those who in surety for debt. If you have nothing with which to pay, why should you take away your debt from under you?
So two things here is one, don't borrow more than you can afford to pay back. You don't want them taking your bed if you can't pay. But then the shaking hands and a pledge and being surety for a debt, that's a cosigner. That's what we would call in modern days, cosigning a loan. And as a parent, sometimes you might cosign a loan for your child for their first vehicle. Well, if your child is not going to be responsible and pay that off, you might end up having a bad credit rating or somebody coming and looking to you for the money. I have a friend that it worked out for us. We were about ready to need to buy another vehicle, and he came to us and said he had to sell one of his vehicles. I think he had three. Single guy, you know, liked cars. But the reason he had to sell one is because he had co-signed loans for some friends. And this last one put him, he had too many cars, because he had co-signed three loans for people, and he also had three cars. And so they said, well, you have six vehicles, that's too many, you have to get rid of one. So, and I was thinking, well, what would he do with all his vehicles if his friends didn't co-sign the loans? I mean, that's just not the wisest thing to do. And here in Solomon's time, he's saying, think about who you're co-signing for and be careful doing that. So, but looking back to kind of summarizing Proverbs, what do we see? We see, one, God is really the one who gives us all of our blessings. So any blessing we have comes from God. That gaining wealth from God, it's not really a passive activity, it's an active one. We need to be out there working and diligently working. And God does reward human activity. Now, it's not a guarantee that just because you work, you're going to do extremely well, but God does reward generosity, helping others, trusting in God. Talks about being poor and righteous, always better than being wealthy and sinful. And then not all rich people are blessed in the long run. That's one thing we read through Proverbs as well. Just because you have wealth doesn't mean you're going to continue it. He also mentions that not all poverty is equal. So some people, yes, are poor because of bad decisions. Other people are poor because of time and chance happen to everybody. And so you can't look down your nose at somebody, well, you should have worked harder. Well, they might have been working harder than you and just things didn't work out right. Proverbs, we also read that riches are best viewed as a byproduct of doing what is right. And most importantly, after the fact that God gives us our wealth, is the fact that money is a powerful tool, but for good, if it's used in the hands of the wise. So we think about when God blesses you, are you going to use that for God's glory, for His honor? Are you going to use it in a wise way? It might be that if you don't, He doesn't continue to bless you that way. Or He might continue to bless you, and you might end up still, your bottom line is right here, and He's given you all this, but you just keep giving it away, and so He keeps giving it to you to give away. I know of a Christian, when he died up in, he was in Kentucky, his estate, it was several million dollars that he left his family. But he gave away 95% of whatever came through his door. And he just kept giving it away, and God just kept blessing him. And so some people I know, God gives them blessings because he knows they're going to use it. And maybe God hasn't blessed me like that because he knows I'm going to be tempted to use it in a way that shouldn't.
My father said he was poor because God knew he didn't know how to handle it.
And that is true. God knows what we can handle. He knows what we need. He knows what others need and uses us to do that. And then we won't get into it due to time, but the book of Job. I mean, Proverbs gives us all these general truths. What is Job? I mean, it shows us the exception to the rule. Here's a really wealthy man who loses everything. He was doing well for obeying God. He was doing well taking care of the fatherless, the widows, his children. He was doing everything right. And he still lost it all. In the end, he really didn't change anything he did, and God gave it all back in double, but yeah. Job is the exception to Proverbs, as far as if Proverbs is the rule. So, other thoughts or questions? I don't think we have time to get them. Yes?
I can't help but think, in going through this, that these are such great arguments against gambling. And, you know, we have a tendency to say, well, what's wrong with gambling? It's just a little this and that. And we, so let's say I've got to define covetousness. I've got to figure that out.
And Proverbs is great. There's 31 chapters. You could read one every day in a typical month and get through the whole book. You can do it every month. I saw a hand over here. Yes?
The email that Bill Holt sent out, he forwarded from Alan Malone about the couple in Vietnam who basically had nothing, lived in a 7.5 by 15 but did such great work.
It's true. Very true. Saw a hand over here. Nope. Okay. Well, thank you. We will carry on next week with the next lesson.